beaucoup, Henri. Last but not least, my colleague, McGill superstar Jody Heyman, founding director of the Institute for Health and Social Policy. She holds a Canada Research Chair in Global Health and Social Policy here at McGill. She has been the author of over 150 publications, including many books, Profit at the Bottom of the Ladder, Raising the Global Floor, Trade and Health, Forgotten Families, Healthier Societies, Unfinished Work, and so on. She's very big on multidisciplinary training, bridging research and policy development with her students gaining experience in 18 countries. Interestingly, she established and is leading the first global initiative to examine social policy in all 192 UN nations, which I think is quite amazing. You could describe perhaps our main line of work as trying to translate research into policies and programs that will improve individuals and population health. So as such, she has been working with leaders, political leaders, and organization leaders in UN, UNICEF, UNESCO, and so on. When I first met her in 2005, I think it was love at first sight, at least on my part. And I'm sorry, Tim, but it has lasted until now. Jody.
Thank you, Denny, for that incredibly kind introduction, and to Tim and to Megan for organizing this fantastic conference, and to you all for still being here. Fantastic. At the end of a day when it's spectacular outside. I hear it's snowing where you're going this weekend. A lot of what I'm going to do, I think, builds on what Peter quoted David Miliband as saying we need to do. I'm going to try to invite you all to work together with me in this notion that we have to bridge not only disciplines across science, but from science to policy. And that's how we're going to spend our time together. So before I start, though, I want to tell you the story of two people, because that's how I keep myself focused on whether or not we're doing the right thing. I want to start with a couple health anecdotes, and then you're going to see how we go from individual lives to what's it mean to actually develop innovative technologies that would allow us to bridge this human to science to policy gap. Okay, first, Anna. So I meet Anna in a public housing project in the United States. Now, her main issue is that she is a kid with asthma, one of the most frequent chronic conditions in North America. She tries to take care of this little girl. However, she needs a job. She's a single mom. If she doesn't go to her job, family doesn't eat. This is not Canada's welfare system. It's the United States welfare system, which doesn't have much of a safety net anymore. Daughter gets sick. She knows she should stay home with her. No policy, no paid sick leave. What she do? Sends her to childcare. Tells the childcare provider, just call me if she gets worse. Do we have any pediatricians in the audience? All right, good. So I'm talking to the pediatricians now for a minute. So when a toddler gets in respiratory distress, do they say, hey, call my mom, I can't breathe? What do kids do? So this could be parents or pediatricians or people who have younger sisters or brothers. Anybody can shout out. What's a kid do who gets sick? Cry, exactly. Thank you. So that's what this child did. Cried, cried, cried. The daycare provider assumed, just cranky. Did not call the mom. Mom comes. Child's in visible respiratory distress, retracting the chest wall to the back with every breath, ends up hospitalized. Why? Because the mom had to choose between her job and whether or not to take care of the kid. Now, here's where we're going to go from national to global. In this case, there was something that we could do and we did do in the United States, which is we knew how to move individual governments. So eventually, fast forward, story I'm happy to tell in Q&A or afterwards, we helped make it so that legislation was introduced in 26 states across the country. California, one state, but about the size of Canada in population, passed paid sick leave. It's now in a very promising state in the federal government. Easier, though, because it's not global. That gets us to the second person I want you to keep in mind while we do this, Elena. So I meet Elena in Honduras. She's in her home holding her little baby. And what you have to know about the little baby that she's cradling is that the limbs look like sticks and the face is as pale as a ghost. I mean, if that cliche expression came from somewhere, it came from this little child. Why? Well, because Elena had to go back to work after 6 weeks or lose her job. So she did what anybody in her situation would do, which is stop breastfeeding. So she stopped breastfeeding. She tried to get enough formula, couldn't afford it. Baby started being fed on watered-down formula, became more and more malnourished. We were there at 4 months already, very malnourished, very thin, not clear how she was going to fare. Now, this presented a bigger challenge, which is going to get us both to the new technologies and what I hope we can all do collectively, which is how do we move these issues globally? So I'm not a citizen of Honduras. Elena didn't have much power in her own country. Even if she did, that's one country. This is an issue whether or not a working mother can actually breastfeed their child, whether we can get basic here, something that decreases illness and death 3 to 5-fold, a possibility around the world, still in shape. But moving that globally, it's not really clear what the political levers are. You can't just go to all countries' governments at once. You don't have the same standing, so what can you do? This is our collective effort at the Institute to try to help give people one additional lever and one additional tool to pull on that. Okay. So what we're going to do today is we're going to go through these social determinants of health primarily and think about how do we bridge from research to policy. So just a quick note, why look at social determinants of health? What's that mean anyway? Labor conditions, poverty, housing, education, all of social conditions. Why would you even think about them? We're in a global health conference. I know there are a bunch of colleagues, students, and friends in the audience who say, of course, that's obvious, but there may be a few of you who don't say that. And I think the most striking statistics as to why, when we think about moving from blue helmets, we should think not only of white lab coats, but maybe beyond the sort of social conditions, which I know was very much in your spirit, Peter, and certainly is in this broader vision that Henri is bringing us of technology and innovation, is that healthcare just doesn't account for enough. The U.S. is the greatest example, number one in healthcare spending, number 32 in female life expectancy or neonatal mortality. Japan, top of the list in outcomes, not topping the list in expenditures. If you just look within Canada, the estimates are that over half of health differentials are due to social determinants of health. In poor countries, it's likely much bigger. Now, the thing about social determinants, though, is that we can't solve them with drug delivery systems. So we can't solve them by figuring out how to make medicines cheap. We can't solve them by figuring out how to do a test. We inevitably end up with policies. So if you're going to change education, you have to work on what the government's doing about education. If poverty is what's really driving it, you have to find a way to lift people out of poverty, and that's going to have to do with economic policy and social policy. So these are not only complex things to change, but they inevitably bring in governments and policymakers. The approach we're taking is one that says you'd need to have some kind of notion as to what's going on in the world. If you want to move policy, you have to have an evidence base, you have to have accountability, and then you have to put that tool, the last stage, in the hands of all of us, of people who can use it. You have to put the tool in the hand of policymakers, you have to put it in the hands of citizens, you have to put it in the hands of researchers. So what's WORLD? WORLD comes from an acronym that members of our team came up with, the World Legal Rights Data Center. This is an initiative where we would start to find out what are the social policies all around the world. Now, some of you may be like I was when we started this, which was saying, don't we already know this? That's what I thought. I had thought that I maybe had left most of my naive conceptions back a few decades ago, but I can tell you that 8 years ago when we started this, I still thought the UN had this information. So we started by going to the UN agencies, and we went to the International Labor Organization and said, tell us, what are the labor policies around the world? And we went to UNESCO about education, and in Paris, they sent us to a back room where there were cardboard boxes. This is post-computers existed, full of papers that all the countries had sent in. I don't know where they thought they were sending it to, but they were sending it to the cardboard boxes in Paris. And there just was not a systematic way. Now, that's not because there aren't fantastic folks in the UN organizations. They are under some real political constraints as to what they can make transparent, and universities have some real advantages there. So what we said is we need to put together something that is comprehensive, gives detail about programs, but also is comparative across countries. To do that, you need a team that speaks a lot of languages. We put together a team that speaks five of the six official UN languages, a handful of others, and then whenever we got a country that we needed a specific language, we'd go and find people with that specific skill to help us. Now, we then had everybody get together and we'd take a policy area. I'm going to walk you through one today, those working conditions that affect Anna and Elena, so that you get a feel for it. But we did this across a wide range of areas. So we said child labor, that affects children's health. Adult labor, that affects adults' health and their kids' health. Education, we know the evidence is that education has a huge gradient impact on all, across health outcomes. Poverty, one of the biggest social determinants of health. Discrimination has both direct effects in terms of changing people's blood pressure, changing people's cortisol levels, changing heart disease rates. It also affects access to care. So we took these areas and we said we're going to look at policies. That means we have to get really concrete, figure out what are the important policies based on the research evidence and how can you compare them across countries. We then had multiple colders, et cetera, and I'm happy to go through methods issues afterwards for anybody who's interested. But I told you I'd take a look at one specific example to give you a flavor, make it a little more concrete. When it came to work and family, those families I started telling you about, we said, look, there's some things that we know make a difference. When you're sick, you need to be able to get care and not lose your job. That's paid sick leave. When women have paid maternity leave, it affects their long-term income, it affects their health outcomes, it affects cancer rates, it affects their kids' health outcomes. That matters. Breastfeeding breaks 3 to 5 times, lowering mortality rates, we knew that mattered. Paid paternity leave, other than breastfeeding, just as important as paid maternity leave. Most of children right now, estimated 900 million, are being cared for in households in which all adults work, not just their parents, extended family, etc. So we know that those who are working need leave to care for their children's health, and they also need leave to care for elderly family members' health. Now, the evidence that these things matter is pretty overwhelming, but I'll just give a few examples. My favorite is this about paid sick leave. We've heard nice messages, I think, from Peter and Henri about the importance both of an altruistic approach and a self-interested approach. I would say sick leave combines them both. But here's the piece I want you to take home, because Canadian policy is mixed on this. Many countries' policies are mixed on this. Do we have any Americans? Okay, outside of California, the United States policy is just bad on this. But here's what you need to know. It's not just your own sick leave, the self-interested, that matters to your own health. It's everybody else's. Why? Because when you go and eat in that restaurant, whether it's here locally or whether it's in another country where you live in or work, realize that whether or not you get diarrhea isn't going to be whether you have sick leave. It's where the restaurant workers have sick leave, so that they're showing up sick because they have no other choice. When you have an elderly parent and they're in a nursing home, it doesn't matter, again, whether you have sick leave. It matters where the nursing home workers have sick leave, because otherwise they're going to spread respiratory infections and gastrointestinal disease to your mom or your dad. Same thing is true in child care centers. You don't need to. How many people have ever put a child in a child care center? Okay? So you don't worry about whether you have it. Worry about whether the other parents have it. I mean, you should worry about your own, too. But if the other parents in the child care center don't have it, I promise you they are sending their children to that child care center sick, and their child is coughing all over your kid. Okay. Maternity leave. The case is overwhelming for maternity leave. We have new data that's looking at the impact of maternity leave on immunization rates, very dramatic effect on child-infant mortality, clear impacts cognitively and on maternal mortality. When it comes to breastfeeding, the big impact on whether women breastfeed is not whether they work. It's whether, when they work, they're allowed to breastfeed while they work. Okay, so there's a lot of research evidence about it. There are even policy recommendations, breastfeed your child till they're 6 months. But the question, I'm going to skip ahead here, except to say that paid paternity leave, which less attention has been paid to, has clear impacts on the couple, on both individual mother and father's outcome and the kids' developmental outcomes. So skipping ahead, you can get me on the internet. I'm going to show you what we're doing on the, in terms of a tool that's readily available to you. Great, thank you. To try to address these. So the question is, do countries have them? And if they don't, can you do something about it? So we want to put a tool in everybody's hands. This is on the web. We're live on the web right now. It's at www.raisingtheglobalfloor.org. This is our first database to go live. It's on adult labor conditions relevant to families. Over the next 4 or 5 years, we will every 9 months roll out a new database to go live. So we will roll out child labor. We'll roll out policies on education. We'll roll out poverty. We'll roll out discrimination. These are all in the works. Also planned is health care, environmental issues in health, and HIV/AIDS policies. So there are a series of ones that are planned. But what it allows you to do is look at countries. So we'll just take one we've been talking about. Say you care about paid sick leave, and you want to know whether it starts on the first day, because you want to know, are those restaurant workers coming to work sick? All you have to do is go to the website, and you pick that you want the whole world. That's global. You pick the policy you want. I pick paid sick leave. But you could pick a whole range of others, and we'll talk about those. And then you just click Get Map. And it tells you what's going on around the world. Now, if you're wondering about a particular country, you can just highlight it. I mean, if you want to go and say what the United States is and why it's red, the answer is no paid sick leave. If you want to look at Canada and say, what's going on here? You say, wow, it doesn't start on the first day. Maybe I'm going to eat in today. Now, if you're from India, working on India, you want to look at India, you can go there. You want to look at China and all that, the assumptions I think that many carry that China has none of these policies. In fact, it does have some of these policies. They have a large informal sector that's not necessarily covered, but the working conditions in the formal sector have been increasing over time. So you can go to any of these and find out what they have. Now, I'm just going to walk you through one other example because we've talked about pregnancy, birth. You just say, okay, well, I was actually pretty interested in breastfeeding, big public health intervention. Well, actually, maybe somebody's more interested in something else. What would you all like to see? And anybody can pick. Breastfeeding, maternity leave, paternity leave, whoever shouts first gets to choose. Okay. So, now, you can do the global map again, but we've seen that. So you may say, okay, well, I want to do some country comparisons. You just click on that and you say, well, I want to know what countries are going on. So I'm going to look at Angora, Antigua. We'll just do these five, but you can pick from all the world's countries. And you can pull up their policies. Now, I want to go back to the global map and say, so how do we hope we'll use this? And what I hope will happen is a couple things. One, people in their countries can get the map and say, how's my country doing? Are we doing well or are we doing poorly? And they can use this to leverage political will. Now, is this far-fetched? I don't think it's far-fetched, and I'll tell you the reason. I used to go around on the maternity leave when I was trying to push the United States, which happens to be one of the hardest countries in the world to move, and say that there was paid maternity leave everywhere except Lesotho, Swaziland, Papua New Guinea, and the United States of America. And then I got an email from Lesotho, and they said, stop lumping us with the United States already. We have passed paid maternity leave. Yes, it's only for 2 weeks, but we've passed it. So people do pay attention when they hear what the rest of the map is. That's one thing we hope to do. If I can get your help just going back to the slides, that'd be great. A second thing we hope to do is empower policymakers themselves. Let them start to learn what other countries are. If they want to pick only looking at countries that are in their same income group, they can do that. If they want to pick their regional group as comparisons, they can do that. Finally, we want researchers to be thinking more about policy, not only to be worrying about how many kids aren't getting their health needs met because of immunizations, because of lack of breastfeeding, because of lack of any parent there to meet their health needs, but to also be thinking about what can be done about it and for them to be able to get a tool. For researchers, we hope that this will allow people to test a lot of theories. I've already talked to you about the components. So I just want to end by saying, ultimately, this is a joint venture. We have helped launch this together with wonderful colleagues around the world, colleagues in the UN agencies, colleagues in universities around the world who are helping us, and a fantastic team at the Institute here, which has been really devoted to it. But its success will depend on whether or not people in individual countries working around the world pick it up and hold people accountable, whether other researchers say, yes, let's use that, look at the impact, and help build the bridge. So I hope you'll join us in that. Thank you very much.